Welcome into the Daft on Draft podcast. I am your host, Corey Kinnan, and we are bringing away a post-Memorial Day episode. Again, I usually post on Mondays and Fridays, but this week, you know, with the holiday being on Monday, you're getting a Tuesday episode. So, nice long weekend. Feel rejuvenated, feel refreshed. We're going to keep continuing along here on our What to Watch for When Watching Exposition scouting series. So, again, we've done quarterbacks with Derek Klassen, running backs with Jordan Reed, wide receivers with Dane Brugler, tight ends with Trevor Sikkema, defensive linemen with John Ledyard. And now we're going to do linebackers with my good buddy, Devin Jackson. You might remember Devin as the co-host of the Daft on Draft podcast in its previous iteration. So Devin is joining me to talk about linebackers. It's a 40-minute conversation, super fun. If you are new to the Daft on Draft podcast, if you are new to NFL draft scouting, content creation, whatever it is, please go listen to those other episodes. They're a wealth of information, wealth of knowledge. I'm really pleased with how this series is turning out. So go listen to those episodes. Again, draft content's for you. The Daft on Draft podcast is for you. So that's the whole purpose of the show. So, but again, we've got a 40-minute conversation with Devin. So let's jump right to that conversation. Again, once I'm hoping to, you know, finish up the series, I've got offensive linemen, and I'm kind of waiting on a different guest for offensive linemen, and who needs a little bit of time to get some stuff ready. So, but it's a really good guest that I really want to nail down. So I'm willing to give them as much time as possible. But after linebackers with Devin here, we've only got corner, safeties, and offensive linemen to go. So we have chugged right through this thing. Again, really pleased with the way that it's turned out. I couldn't have done it without the guests that I've gotten. It's hard to have a conversation about breaking down these different positions without people who have been at the top of the game in terms of draft content. And so getting guys from ESPN, Reception Perception, PFF, The Athletic, so on and so forth, it's been a really cool experience. So I hope you guys have enjoyed it as well. But without babbling on too much further, let's jump to that conversation with Devin. And now moving on to the linebacker position in my scouting series, what to watch for when scouting these certain positions. And I'm bringing on a familiar face to the Daft on Draft podcast, someone who has been on every single episode up until I relaunched. And so you've heard his voice on 18 episodes if you've listened to every single episode. It's Devin Jackson. Devin, it is good to have you on the Daft on Draft podcast.
Yeah, man. Glad to be back. And I know you didn't get a chance to really podcast or really be much into the 2024 class, but you've already started your work on 2025. You know, we were chatting a little bit before we started recording about some guys that we like early in the 2025 class, but excited to be back on and talk with you and talk through some linebackers.
Yeah. Linebacker position feels like it's been a moving target over the past 3-4 years or so. And so I'm excited to dive in because it seems like the NFL is always shifting in what they're looking for. But what is coming up from the college level is kind of also dictating kind of what they're getting at the position as well, right? So we'll dive into that a little bit more. But, you know, I've asked this question about running backs, asked this question about safeties, and I feel like it applies to linebacker as well. And that has to do with the positional value of the linebacker position, right? So we have seen quite a few names go in round one over the past, since, you know, 2020. But it seems like those guys who go day two seem to be not far off from those guys who go day one, right? So I mean, when we're talking about day one, we're talking about Isaiah Simmons, Kenneth Murray, Jordan Brooks, Patrick Queen from 2020, Zaven Collins, Jamin Davis from 2021, Quay Walker, Devin Lloyd from 2022, Jack Campbell from 2023, none in 2024. So there have been quite a few names that have gone first round. But is it something that you would do, Devin?
I think the way that everything is currently set up in NFL, I don't think so, just because you haven't seen the returns on the value taking a guy in the first round, at least not recently. You know, I think the game has kind of evolved where, you know, you want a great athlete at the linebacker position. You want a guy that can cover, that can tackle, go sideline to sideline. but how high are you willing to take them? One, and then two, they're going to have to be paid, you know, once that first contract is up. So I think that kind of factors into it. You know, it's almost like, and a lot of that has to do with like the quarterback market, but even like some of the other markets, like the defensive lineman market, the edge market, the corner market, on the defensive side of the ball that have upped, you know, in the last 4 or 5 years, that has made the linebacker position not as valuable to taking the first round. And ultimately, in terms of team building, you know, a great example is that of that is the Kansas City Chiefs and what they've been able to do with day two linebackers. So I think personally, no, I don't think I'm on that, unless you're getting a guy that's kind of a transcendent type talent that can immediately like upgrade your defense. And, you know, as a guy that is a can't miss guy, I just don't think we've had that over the last couple of cycles. At the very, very least, like Jack Campbell going in 2023, you're like, sure, fine. But, you know, I probably wouldn't have done if I were the Lions. And we'll see, and kind of the jury's still out on him in terms of, is he going to step up and kind of take that next step on in the Lions defense? But personally, I would say no.
Yeah, I think I'm with you. One, because it just feels like we're drafting good athletes, right? The NFL is putting so much speed on the offensive side of the ball. Like, Miami drafts every player who runs a 4-3. Like, that's just like that what they're doing right now, right? So people are putting elite linebacker athletes on the field, or they're prioritizing them. But I think it's kind of backfiring a little bit, where like, yeah, you're taking good athletes, but their tape shows like a lot of holes. And I think like Jamin Davis is the perfect example of this, right? Like, drafted in the first round by the Washington football team is what they were back then, right? Drafted in the first round by the Washington football team because he's a freak athlete and he had a frame to grow into, but there wasn't really anything about his Kentucky tape that's like, this guy's a first round linebacker. And I think the same, Devin Lloyd, people liked Devin Lloyd a lot out of Utah, and Devin Lloyd's tape was, I would say, a lot better than Jamin Davis's, but I think Devin Lloyd's kind of the same way. And then he gets drafted by Jacksonville. Jacksonville also drafts Chad Muma out of Wyoming on day two. And Muma's been the better linebacker of the two in Jacksonville. So I just think you can find linebacker talent on day two where the gap between those talents isn't extraordinary. I think there's a case to be made, and maybe it's not. It's actually not a case. Jordan Brooks is the best of those 2020 linebackers, and he was drafted in the 20s. So, and I think another way like that we're missing on these linebackers is we have to have a position for these guys, right? So like Isaiah Simmons is the penultimate like horror story of drafting an elite athlete who did everything he was asked to do at college, but then he comes to the NFL and this guy's got to play a position, but what position are you playing him at? And if you play him at safety, can he do what you need a safety to do at the NFL level? And if you're playing him at a linebacker, can he do what you need him to do at linebacker at the NFL level?
Yeah, I think this is the ultimate conundrum in terms of, you know, how do you value some of these players? Where are they going to play? How do they project? And obviously we're going to get more into the process in doing that and determining like which players kind of stand out for the rest, where are some traits and things like that. But yeah, I mean, I think you make some great points. I think the linebacker position will continue to be complicated just because you have to have elite athletes at that position, but you also have to have guys that, you know, maybe you don't value, or there's not a big gap in them coming out. You know, several guys that can do kind of that similar skill set, but maybe you like him in round three instead of taking a guy in the top 15 or top 20. So I think it's really, you've seen kind of the successful linebackers, some of the best linebackers weren't even taken in round one in the NFL at this point. You know, a lot of day two and day three guys have really emerged and really have made careers off of having those elite traits, but not necessarily being finished products when they were coming out of college and continue to develop once they get to the NFL. So it's really a complicated, you know, process in discussing linebackers, because they're certainly important to defense, but how much value you place on taking them early in the draft versus taking one on day two or day three, I think you've seen teams trend more to the latter than the former.
And that's why I'm so excited about this series is like, we talk so much about traits, we talk so much about tools, but like, how do you project a guy to the next level is really a tough thing to do. How do you say like, well, this guy doesn't have it in college on his college tape, but I think he has the traits to do at the NFL level. It's a really tough thing to do. Or what doesn't he do at college? And is that something that's coachable versus he doesn't do that, but that's more of a physical asset, or that's more of something that's like, you kind of got it or you don't, right? So like we were talking about running back to Jordan Reed, and he's like, listen, man, if a guy doesn't have vision at the college level, that's not something he's going to learn at the NFL level. So like that's, even though that's not a physical trait, it's not like speed, explosiveness, agility, things like that. It's something that's like, you either got it or you don't. And I think the linebacker position is kind of the same way when we get to start talking about some of these other tools like eyes and their trigger and things like that. But it's just also interesting to see the how the pendulum has swung with the makeup of these linebackers as well. Like, I mean, the days of like a Brian Urlacher, Ray Lewis seem like they're in the past. Like, it is extremely difficult to find a 240-pound linebacker in today's college football. And then when we're looking at these guys coming to the NFL level, finding a 240-pound linebacker is not easy to do. Most of these guys are 220 pounds, and they're being asked at the college level to be more of run and chase players, sideline to sideline players, rather than getting downhill, displacing blocks, and just creating chaos. But I also have hope, because some of my favorite linebackers are those run thumping linebackers who will come down, who will hit, who will displace a guard and just create chaos in the middle of the trenches. I have hope that pendulum might be swinging back because of some of the 12 personnel, the uptick, massive uptick in 12 personnel we're seeing in the NFL. Devin, what is your take? Do you think that we will see that? Or do you think, well, no, that's actually contributing to why these linebackers are smaller, because if they're putting two tight ends on the field, we want linebackers who can track with these tight ends. It's kind of a murky landscape to kind of navigate.
Yeah, it's really dependent on what your defense is kind of based off the philosophies. So it kind of varies from team to team. But I think generally speaking, we're kind of finding that little middle gray area where you don't want your guys like 240, 245 and just being thumpers, but you also don't want them to be extremely light and just athletes and have to outrun everyone to make plays. So I think we're finding kind of that middle ground where maybe you have one linebacker that's more of a thumper, one that's more of a more athletic, you know, can move around, can be a little bit more versatile type of player. You know, I think the Eagles are a perfect example in trying to get to that area where, you know, they signed Devin White in the offseason to be more of that run and chase type of player. But now they have like N'Kobe Dean, they are added Jeremiah Tarr Jr. to the room. Guys that are more of thumpers, more of the old school type of players. So I think you're kind of getting that mix of both where you have, and the Bucs tried to do that with Devin White. Obviously, it just didn't work out with Levante David and Devin White. But I think you're kind of getting the mix and clashes of skill sets and getting one guy that specializes more in one area and one in the other area to kind of make it more of a tandem that works versus getting just two guys that are athletes to try and make plays. Because you still need to be able to have that thumper type, a guy that can come down and create chaos, that can shed blocks, even though shedding blocks isn't, I would say, a premium thing anymore at the linebacker position. You just got to be able to make plays and get to those spots, beat offensive linemen to the spots at this point in time. But I think you have to have a little bit of both to have a successful linebacker room and be able to do that. I mean, the Chiefs, again, are a great example with Willie Gay and Leo Chenal, you know, kind of contrasting styles in the way they play, but both like to come downhill and be thumpers in a run game. So you got to be able to do a little bit of both. And it just makes it extremely difficult for those coming from the college level, because then you have to figure out if you played Mike at the college level, but you're 230, you know, 225, but you're more of the athlete type, like, do you move to Will? You know, do you move to a different position? You know, what is your outlook in the NFL? So I think it becomes a little bit murky in terms of what they're being asked to do in college, maybe a product of the lack of talent they may have at that position versus NFL, where the talent is all there, but it's about making plays, being consistent, and having the strength and instincts and whatnot to make plays at the NFL level. So I think we're kind of in the area where you kind of need both sides of the spectrum to be successful at the NFL level, to counteract some of the 12 personnel, but also be able to get out and cover and follow those tight ends down the field and up the seam as you need to in man coverage.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. It's like playing Mike linebacker in the Pac-12 when you're constantly just playing against 10 and 11 personnel and they're 4-5 wide all the time versus playing even 10, 11 personnel or 11 personnel in the NFL where it's really condensed. That's a huge difference. And so I think that's what makes linebackers such a murky position, because it's like, well, how are they going to process versus condensed versus knowing that like these receivers are spread out and that's a lot of more ground to cover. It's really a murky position. But now let's dive into some of those traitsy, like the nitty gritty of breaking down a linebacker. Right. So Devin, before we start, I've asked this to John Ledyard about defensive ends and defensive tackles. And I asked this to a couple other people, but when you're looking at a linebacker, what are your deal breakers? What are your non-negotiables? Like if a linebacker doesn't have this, it's like, I have a really hard time projecting you at the NFL level.
Yeah, man, it starts with the eyes. You know, you got to be able to dissect what's happening in front of you and not kind of get lost in the trash, because, you know, the eyes really are glued to everything else, especially playing the linebacker position. You know, some guys you can kind of tell are like trying to play both sides of it. So if it's like playing, you know, against, you know, the option or spread option or read option, even RPOs, I think, you know, there's so much to that's being thrown at you, but you have to be able to stay disciplined and follow your keys, you know, whether it's following the guard, if they're pulling, or, you know, if they're pass dropping into coverage. If you guys and you're able to be full quick, you're not going to last long in the league. You know, it just kind of the fact of the matter. You could have all the talent in the world, all the athleticism, but if you don't have disciplined eyes and the ability to dissect plays as happening in front of you and be able to trigger based off of those keys that are happening, then I don't think you can be successful at the NFL level. So eyes is definitely a big one for me. I would say, you know, kind of hip fluidity is another big one. You know, I think it is so hard to, you know, kind of disengage from coming up in the run defending and then turning and then, you know, finding your curl to flat drop, especially at the linebacker position. But if you're stiff doing it, I mean, even that one half a step slow, one step slow. And I mean, the play is happening right behind your head. You know, it's really a game of inches at the NFL level. But if you don't have great hips, I mean, you can't stop on a dime and you know, make open field. You're going to have a lot of one-on-one situations against running backs and tight ends, where you have to make plays on your own. I mean, you're essentially on the island at times playing running back, and especially when you're meeting them in the hole. Running backs are too athletic, too smart, too physical, and to be a guy that only can go north and south, but can't change direction. So I think hip fluidity kind of goes in conjunction with the ability to change and stop on a dime. So I would say those are the two big ones. And then the third one is be a playmaker, you know, take the ball away, be able to cut off passing lanes, get underneath passing lanes, be counted on to make those plays when need be, and also add kind of a dimension as a blitzer. And I think that's kind of an underrated part of playing the linebacker position. While you may not be a guy that's a true pass rusher or going to be getting after the quarterback, you got to be able to make an impact when you are sent on a blitz and there's a vacated zone behind you, a vacated alley behind you. And you have to be a difference maker, not only as a run defender, as a pass, you know, in defending the pass, but also as a blitzer and be able to get after the quarterback as well. So I think those are kind of the big non-negotiables for me. I think those are you know, pretty broad, the big things that come with the linebacker position. I think really it goes hand in hand with some of the other minute, you know, things that you look for when you're evaluating a linebacker.
Yeah, I've said it probably three or four times in the scouting series, but if there's one trait that supersedes every single position, like if you could pick one trait that, like, if you don't have it at any position, you're probably not going to be a very good NFL player. And it is that fluidity. It's that flexibility. Like, if you're not a flexible football player, the ability to change directions, the ability to sink hips, I don't think it matters what position you play. Like, I don't think you're long for the NFL. And so I think it definitely translates to linebacker for the reasons you said. But I definitely agree with your other points as well. So diving into the eyes, right? You said that's a huge non-negotiable. And I think this really applies to today's NFL linebackers, right? Or the guys coming out of college to the NFL, these smaller guys. You said earlier, like, it's really not about displacing anymore. It's about beating dudes at the spot. So just get there quicker than the offensive lineman trying to climb and get to you. And I think a perfect example of this is Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, right? So, like, it's really easy for me to compare to Browns players because that's what I'm most familiar with. But Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah is 6'2", 220. So he's not a big dude, but his trigger, he triggers so fast. He is unbelievably explosive and unbelievably disruptive. Sure, he misses some tackles, but what he's doing, he's missing tackles behind the line of scrimmage. He's missing tackles at the line of scrimmage where he's causing running backs, ball carriers to stop, to force that missed tackle. And by that time, if it's in the backfield, it's at the line of scrimmage, there's 10 other defenders right there in their face. So I think the 61 stop tackles really, really talks, the 18 pressures really talks to what kind of the eyes and the trigger of Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, even though he does kind of miss those tackles, even though he is undersized. It's just how fast he sees things, how fast he gets the football, and just routinely beating those guys to the spot. And so I really like what you said about eyes, because again, Jordan Reed said this really well about running backs. He's like, there are some really good running backs out there who run 4.5s, who run 4.6s, who are better than guys who run 4.3s, because there are some guys who run 4.3s who are really bad at seeing holes, who have really bad vision. And so if it takes them an added half second, they're running slower than a 4.5. So I think linebackers kind of that same way. Like, if you have a 4.3 linebacker, Jamin Davis, again, a great example of this. If you've got an elite linebacker athlete, but if he's not seeing things, then what is that speed doing? If he's a 4.4 athlete, he's running a 4.6 40 trying to get to the football. If he's not seeing the football fast enough, or if you have a 4.5 linebacker who sees the field faster, he's a 4.5 linebacker, true and true. And that's good enough. I think you see it with a lot of teams. Some of these Mike linebackers aren't like spectacular on film. Like, they're not spectacular players. They aren't making the Fred Warner type plays, but they know what their role is and they know how to get to the football. And so I think the eyes and the trigger is really where it starts for the linebacker. So I think that starts pre-snap. Obviously, it's really fun to watch those linebackers, you know, who you can tell they watch film. They know what's coming. They're pointing everything out. They're getting guys lined up. They're getting guys in position, ball snapped, and they're in the gap. I love those kind of linebackers. So you can kind of see that on tape. Again, those are the kind of things that you just kind of watch and you can conjecturize a little bit because you don't know what their role is in the play. You're not in the room, right? You can kind of use context to figure some things out, but you don't know 100%. But really, it's that post-snap. Like, how fast are you seeing what's going on in front of you and how fast are you getting where you need to go? And again, that has nothing to do with your 40 time. That has to do with your eyes and your trigger. Again, your trigger does include that change of direction, because if you see it, but you can't put your foot in the ground and change directions and get moving in the right direction, then yeah, that's going to slow you down too. But I think we're missing the mark when we're just drafting these great athletes, which the NFL seemed to have been doing early on.
Yeah, it's been kind of strange to see what has been working for some NFL teams and some other NFL teams doing kind of the opposite, where you're taking kind of raw, but, you know, really exciting athlete at the linebacker position. Cause I feel like at any position, when you think about all the positions, you use the term raw, you really got to tread lightly, especially at the linebacker position, just because, you know, you got to really define how raw are they? Are they just, you know, raw in terms of, like, they can't see the play fully develop fast enough? Like, are they raw where, you know, maybe they're not finishing tackles as often as you need to? Like, it really has to be defined, but also you have to know if they know what they're seeing. You know, like, that has to be kind of a non-negotiable when you draft a player, especially a linebacker, because the clock is ticking as soon as they get in the building. You know, whether they're taking first round, whether they're taking day two, or day three, they're already working to that next extension just because, you know, when you think about the shelf life of a running back, I mean, linebacker is a high impact position. You're in on every play. There's a good chance that you're going to get banged up in your career. And if you don't stick, you know, there's a bunch of other guys waiting, you know, UDFAs, guys from other leagues now at the linebacker position. Like the pool for the linebacker position, you got to make an impact right away as a draftee to not only get on the field, but find yourself on a roster in a couple of years, because you show that you don't have great eyes, you show you don't have a great trigger or finishing ability, then all of a sudden you're out of the league as quickly as you got in. So I feel like the linebacker position is kind of volatile in the way that it can be turned over, especially from team to team. I mean, I talk about the Eagles because I, you know, obviously with the Inquirer, I pay a lot of attention to the Eagles, but they remade their entire linebacker room after last year's disaster. And they were trying to patchwork it last year with, you know, Shaq Leonard and Zach Cunningham and all these different players, you know, that maybe have been around, but, you know, have kind of like bounced around now. And maybe they won't find a team this upcoming year. So it's really like either you have or you don't as a linebacker. Like, sure, you can get a little bit better in terms of your pass drops and getting into passing lanes and whatnot, but you can't really improve in terms of, like, you can see things at the college level, but you're going to be able to see at the NFL level. Like, you got to show that ability. Even if you're not finishing every play, you know, you can fix finishing, but you can't fix those eyes.
Yeah. Again, it's cool. Another reason I really like the series is it's cool to pull things from other positions that we've talked about, like Derek Klassen and quarterbacks. He said, yeah, man, I've really stopped caring about quarterbacks who don't come from NFL offenses. None of these guys come from NFL offenses anymore, right? Like, JJ McCarthy's probably the closest thing, but he's like, I don't really care too much about that anymore. I want to know, like, in the offense that you are running, are you doing what you are expected to do? Or can I at least see that you are trying to do what you're expected to do? And I think linebackers the same way when we're talking about these guys, because I think that does show some football IQ, some things that say, okay, even though the learning curve might be steep, this won't be beyond this player. So I think that's a really good place to start talking about the eyes and the trigger, and especially with these linebackers coming up. But again, as I mentioned, I really love a good old-fashioned throwback linebacker. Leo Chenal for me was that in the 2022 class. I was a huge Leo Chenal guy. I had him as my linebacker one, a top 20 player in the class, actually. Fell all the way to into the 100th. He was like the end of the third round. So like he was in the like pick 100-ish, somewhere in that range of the Chiefs in the comp pick range. And he's been a real playmaker for the Chiefs and was their best linebacker in the Super Bowl. So I think there's still something to it too. Even though we're saying the NFL is a passing league and we want linebackers who can backpedal, which we'll get to talking about some coverage ability in a bit, I still think there's something deep within my heart that says, but your linebacker still has to come downhill, man. Like, you need a guy who can come downhill. Like, yeah, I'd like to see what he can do in a backpedal, but like, if he can't come downhill and he can't make a play at the line of scrimmage or he can't stick his nose in and disrupt something, then like, that's not a linebacker to me. So that's where I want to come down and kind of talk about now. And honestly, the first linebacker taken in this past year's draft is that mold of linebacker. And Edgerrin Cooper went to the Packers 45th overall. Again, that's the first linebacker off the board. And lo and behold, like the trait that he has that these other linebackers, the Junior Colsons, the Peyton Wilsons, they weren't really physical. I mean, there's some other stuff with Peyton Wilson, like his health and things that played into him slipping. But like, those aren't physical linebackers come downhill and engaging in contact at the line of scrimmage or near the line of scrimmage the way that Edgerrin Cooper did. Again, that goes back to his trigger, but coming downhill and that ability to make plays at the line of scrimmage, behind the line of scrimmage, again, how explosively can you get downhill when you do trigger? I think is a huge part of that. And I think Edgerrin Cooper is going to be a really good linebacker at the NFL level for quite a few years because of that. But Devin, when you are evaluating a linebacker's ability to provide in run support and to be that guy at or near the line of scrimmage? Kind of what are some of the things that you're looking for?
Well, I'm kind of looking first, like, are they reacting to what the offense is running? So it's almost like you're watching kind of both sides of the ball and seeing, like, you know, are they going, are they mirroring what's happening, like, in front of them? You know, especially in run defense. Like, are they, you know, especially, like, on an outside zone, I think you can tell most a guy that's mirroring or not, because you can quickly get behind or in front of the play. In the way that some guys like overrun it sometimes, some guys like underrun it. I think that's like the perfect play to like show, because like obviously the offense is trying to split your defense in half. But then like, especially on those backside linebackers, like are you flowing still? Like are you, you know, waiting for that cutback lane, that inevitable cutback, you know, on outside zone? Or are you a guy that's just running and running past the hole completely? So you can really see in that type of play, you can see in counter as well. Like, you know, are you mirroring what's happening in front of you? Are you following the offensive lineman? And then are you shooting those gaps when you have the chance to do it? I think those are kind of like those big aspects in watching linebackers and seeing what they can do at the point of attack. Because, like, you're going to have to beat, you know, a combo block, you know, working up to you. At some point in zone, you're going to have to take on at times a pulling, you know, tackle or guard. And how do you do it? You know, how do you attack it? You know, do you tag it full on? Do you kind of like whiff or try to go around it? You know, there's so many, you can quickly find out if a guy likes to handle contact, likes to initiate contact, or a guy that's more of a catcher and try to get around the block versus like going through it. So I think like outside zone is a perfect example of that. Counter is a great example too. Even trap plays, even quick hitting plays up the middle. Like, are you able to maintain, like, you know, maybe leave that one arm, your outside arm free to make a play, even if a guy offensive lineman gets contact on you. There's so many different ways to kind of tell if a guy likes contact or not. But I think the most important way is like, do you see what's happening in front of you? Do you trigger downhill? Do you work inside out on a ball carrier to get him down to the ground? You know, whether you slow him up, whether you force him to cut back into the teeth of your defense, you got to stay assignment sound, especially on those plays, because one missed assignment, one missed angle, and a big play is happening behind you.
Yeah, I'm so glad you talked about that, because we honestly missed talking about that in terms of when we were talking about eyes. And it's crucial. It's like these linebackers have run fits. So, yeah, their job is to tackle ball carriers, but their job is not to chase down every single ball carrier that they see, right? So, like, I think outside zone's a really good example of that, because there are a lot of really good running backs who are unbelievable at finding backside creases. And if you are a linebacker who your fit is that backside B, that backside C gap, and you're over pursuing and you're just trying to make that front side play, you are leaving backside wide open. So I think we didn't hit on in eyes, but it's so crucial. And I think this is what sometimes people miss when evaluating linebackers too, is they'll say like, well, that guy didn't make a play on the football, but yeah, he's fitting backside B, he's doing his job. Like that's what I want to see, is he playing smart football. And so I think that's a really good point to hit on as well. Is even if a linebacker whose main job is to chase and tackle a ball carrier isn't going all out after a ball carrier, it does not mean he is not doing his job. So I think that's really worth hitting on as well, that these linebackers also have run fits. And sometimes it is their job to fill backside like that. That's it. So if a running back does try to cut back, there is somebody home to make the play. So I think that's really, really important to hammer home as well there. And then the last part of evaluating linebackers that I want to talk about is kind of where we started. So bringing it full circle, teams want to see their linebackers backpedal almost as much as they want to see him trigger downhill these days. Again, I still say that's just me. It's like, I want contact. Show me violence. Get downhill. Make a play at the line of scrimmage. Be disruptive. But I think it's kind of the same way with quarterbacks, like the Josh Allen effect. Like they saw this really raw Utah passer whose feet were terrible come to the NFL and light it up. And they're like, well, we just got to go after tools then. It doesn't matter. We can coach the rest. And then they quickly found out like, oh, actually, no, we can't. There are some really bad quarterbacks with really awesome tools out there. And they've kind of come back. but it's kind of the same with the linebacker position. I think it's like the Fred Warner effect, right? Like you see Fred Warner roboting out and you see the Fred Warner tracking tight ends 20, 30 yards down the field. You see Fred Warner flipping his hips and tracking and man coverage on these guys. He has no business staying stride for stride with. And so I think NFL teams are like, well, we got to find a Fred Warner. Well, good luck. Like you're not going to find it. Like, that's not a thing. That Fred Warner's just don't grow on trees. Find a good football player, find a sound football player. And if you can kind of get those instinctual things out of him, then yeah, that's a bonus as well. But I think that's almost led us to, as you know, in addition to the growth of the NFL is now 65-35 in terms of pass run. Yeah, I get it. You want some linebackers you can cover. Absolutely. So we have to talk about it. In terms of evaluating linebackers in coverage, again, it's another tricky thing because you get all sorts of pattern matching at the college level. You get all sorts of different concepts. And so you kind of break it down. Like, are they in four? Are they six? Is it two? Like, and you really have to, that's what makes linebackers. And I think defensive backs, those are some of the longest evaluations because you really have to find out what their responsibilities are in coverage before you can say like they did a bad job on that pass play. But for me, when I evaluate a linebacker in coverage, I think what I look for first and foremost is how much ground can you trust this linebacker to cover? I think that's my starting point. I don't start with, well, can he track a tight end down the field? I don't start with, well, can he cover a running back up the field on a wheel route? That's fine. I want to know, is this a linebacker you just have a sit and hook curl, or can you run him up the seam in Tampa 2? Can you get him out wide? Like those are the kinds of things that I want to see from a traits perspective when I'm talking about coverage. And I think that's a good place to start. But I think most importantly for me, in terms of what it means to be a good coverage linebacker, and this takes a lot of film, a lot of film work, and a lot of anticipation. But it's the biggest thing is like, can you feel out a route concept in real time and anticipate a route coming in behind you? Like, there are so many very evident cover three beaters out there. There are so many three beaters out there. My biggest pet peeve is when a Mike cannot feel that backside like cross coming in behind him. It's like, dude, this is a cover three beater. It's like one of the most like basic concepts. They're going to run the front side guy on a nine, and they're going to try to bring a crosser in behind him, like into that vacated zone. Like, you have to be able to feel that out in coverage. And so I think that's my biggest thing when I'm evaluating linebackers in coverage is, you have to be able to anticipate your peripherals. You have to know where receivers are, if they're coming in behind you, and anticipate that and make a play on the football.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely one of the biggest areas in terms of coverage for a linebacker, you know. But I also think it's not being fooled by what's happening, you know, around you as well, because obviously the emergence of RPOs at the college level has been a big thing. You know, there's a lot of eye candy, a lot of motion, but when you think about it, a lot of these plays are just being run the same concepts, you know, like they're not anything different being run. It's just the way that they're getting into and out of it is different. You know, like you're playing cover three, you know, crossers are coming. Like, I think in hand with being able to recognize what's happening around you is understanding the situation as well. And being able to kind of like inference, like, oh, it's third and seven or third and eight. Well, here's what they can run and the types of plays that they can run and where they're going to attack, you know, depending on what they have. But for the most part, you know, even those third and mediums, you know, third and like kind of long, like, you know, they're going to attack the middle of the field or kind of those vacated zones behind you. And is it, be able to read that, you know, like mesh is a good example as well. Like if you can derail one mesh, like, or knock it off track or kind of disrupt it, then they can't really mesh. And then all of a sudden, you know, they can't find anywhere to go because you kind of disrupted the timing. So it kind of goes hand in hand. Like, what are you being asked to do? But can you also disrupt the timing and disrupt the passing lanes as well as a coverage linebacker? I think that's so important because you can't be just a guy that, like you said, that runs up the seam with tight ends or can follow running backs. Can you make the plays that maybe necessarily you know, coaches aren't asking you to make, but you can make because your eyes and anticipation are so good, and you're able to see what's coming behind you, what's coming adjacent to you. And you understand what they can run out of those types of sets. And I think that kind of really separates some of the best from average linebackers is you know what's coming and you know how to get in that particular passing lane to stop it. Because, you know, like we talked about throughout this episode, athleticism important, you know, speed, you know, be able to read everything. But having that natural feel, too, as a coverage linebacker really can't be taught. You know, you just got to be able to anticipate that and be able to see it and get your hand on it and know when to, you know, undercut, you know, a deep crosser coming behind you or undercut, a spot route that's happening right next to you on third and five, you know, flying out to, you know, the kind of your hook curl zone, a swing pass out to the running back. Like they love to do those rub routes where, you know, they pick off the linebacker and, you know, have the running back go on the wheel route. You know, can you quickly identify that and then still turn and make a play? So I think those are important when you're talking about the linebacker position.
Yeah. Again, this is like going back to guys who are not just tremendous athletes, but like really smart football players. They make the better linebackers. Like it just is what it is. Like, look at Logan Wilson's interception numbers. Logan Wilson's interception numbers are unbelievable. Matt Milano is kind of the same way, right? Like, those guys are not tremendous. Matt Milano ran a 4.67 40-yard dash, and he had a season-ending injury this year. But, like, before that, like, 2022, he might have been the best linebacker in the NFL. Like, it is what it is. Be a smart football player and have some understanding of what's going on around you. Again, Logan Wilson ran a 4.63. These guys aren't 4.4 athletes. Logan Wilson jumped 32 inches in the vertical jump. Like, this is not an elite athlete. It's a really smart football player. And that's where it starts. And so, like, in coverage, in run support, like, are you doing your job? Just, like, do your – and not only that, but, like, I'm trying to think of a really good example. I think jazz music is the one that people use all the time, and I hate that example, but I'm going to use it anyway. It's, like, jazz artists know the notes to hit, but they also know what sounds good around those notes that hit. Like, that improvisation is what makes a good jazz artist, right? It's not like this really rigid style of music. It's free flowing. And then I think linebackers kind of the same way. Like, yes, a linebacker knows that I'm going to fit the A gap here, but based on what I saw in film of this guy, I know if I'm going to do that, he's going to do this. So maybe I can get a step in that direction. And like, I don't want a robotic linebacker, as I think is what I'm trying to say, like, either. Like, so the really good ones aren't robotic in their responsibilities either. But it's a really fun but difficult position to evaluate. Like, I don't know if we help listeners figure out, like, how to watch linebackers better or, like, what to look for when scouting linebackers, or just, like, I think there are some sparks flying out of my brain a little bit after this conversation. But, like, in a good way, it's like, yeah, okay, I get it. But, like, yes, it's hard. It's nebulous. These college linebackers coming to the NFL are probably doing 40% of the things they're going to get the NFL, and a coach is going to tell them, don't do that anymore. So, like, that's the tough part about this, right?
Yeah, I mean, and I think really when you think about any position, but especially a linebacker position, you know, things that work at the college level aren't always going to translate, you know. You can get away with some things at the college level, especially depending on who you're playing, the types of teams you're playing. But at the NFL level, they're going to exploit every weakness or exploit every, you know, kind of thing that you may need to work on, or they know that's something you struggle with or the concepts you struggle with. So it's really kind of like a constant improvement over time. But those, you know, defining traits that we talked about at the beginning, I think, you know, eyes, trigger, and then, you know, athleticism in terms of hip fluidity are always going to be the most important details when it comes to linebackers. You got to have it. You know, it can't be something you can't have. and then still find a successful career at the NFL level. Sure, there are like some small examples where guys maybe don't fit some of those things, but in terms of like eyes and trigger, you have to have it, no matter how fast or athletic you are.
Yeah, I think that's a great synopsis of the episode. Start with the eyes, start with the change of direction skills, go from there. So Devin, again, you know, you are a welcome guest on the Dapped on Draft podcast at any time. I appreciate you. I think we did a pretty good job. That's about a 40-minute episode, 40-minute conversation on linebackers. So again, Devin, tell everybody where you can find you. You're all over the place. Fill your Inquirer, new Substack. Tell the people where you're at.
Yeah. Find me at theinquirer.com, Substack with Alex Kasson, two-gap Substack, where we're just going to cover the NFL draft pretty much year-round. Working up an edge breakdown of the edge class in 2025, kind of an early look, you know, some sleepers, some guys to watch, you know, some different types of skill sets that they bring, and a lot more. Some interviews upcoming as well with some 2025 prospects. So a lot coming, you know, over the next couple of weeks and months. So I'm excited to share with all of you guys.
Yeah, and Devin and I've preliminarily reached out to Devin and we're working through it, but again, I want Devin on the podcast as much as Devin wants to be on the podcast still. So still trying to figure out ways to make that happen, whether it's once a week or what. But again, Devin Jackson, welcome friend of the Dapped on Draft podcast.